I have no idea if that was correct, or at least grammatically correct, but I'm really trying hard to learn and apply Lakota Yapi, and so I think I said hello to my relatives, maybe. This is Bands of Turtle Island. I am almost completely sure I butchered it, as I didn't ask my grandma if that was correct. So don't roast me too hard, any of my fellow Lakotas. Anyway, I am Zakata, or as you all remember me as Wolf or Shemana Tutanka. But anyway, like I said, in the 20 points episode, I chose a new alias, and so many indigenous people online use Wolf as an alias. Like, we have, like, a Where Have We Been episode in the works. It was already recorded. It got corrupted, so I need to record it again. So bear with us while that eventually comes out. And it's going to be the official episode 2. So it's a little annoying for everybody who's been listening for a while. Episode 2 is practically unsalvageable. Before we go anywhere in the episode, I wanted to promote Hunze's newest organizational effort for Unistotenkamp. Our Ways Always is a zine which I have zero clue what zine actually is. And P was going to explain it, but issues came out where we weren't able to record. And so here I am doing it all by myself. This is the first time I'm ever doing it by myself, so bear with me if the episode's a little off, you know. But Our Way Always is a zine that is giving all money to the camp to help them in their fight against federal Canadian action against Indigenous people in Canada. Inarguably, it is a continued act of genocide, and even today we can see a further and exasperated situation with the Mi'kmaq, not only including the risk of federal termination in the U.S., but a series of hate crimes against Mi'kmaq in the Nova Scotia area. I wanted to highlight the story and topic at the beginning of the episode, since that is when listener retention is the highest, according to statistics. So the episode's primarily going to be about Bolivia, but we are going to talk about this for the first half, so skip to like 10 minutes ahead, maybe. I don't know.
Please skip to 9 minutes 30 for a recap on Bolivia, and 18 minutes 50 for information that wasn't included in the previous episode.
So anyway, September 17th, the... I'm going to butcher this. Sipekenekatik First Nation, which is a part of the Mi'kmaq, launched a self-regulating fishery at a wharf in Nova Scotia to practice their hunting rights with out-of-season fishing. This has caused an uproar in settler fishermen who claim to be angry for conservation reasons and has brought them to use colonial violence, shooting flares at First Nation fishermen, removing lobster traps by force, setting boats on fire. And on about October 16th, 2020, a fishery was set on fire and burned to the ground under these pretexts of conserving lobster wildlife. Another incident mentioned in Dan Bilevsky's New York Times article occurred when a crowd of 200 fishermen locked a Mi'kmaq man inside the fishery building, tossing stones demanding to be let in. While one man pissed in the passenger side of the Mi'kmaq man's van, all while he waited for the RCMP to respond to his plea for help over the phone. When the RCMP finally arrived, they saw a human chain dumping thousands of pounds of lobsters back into the water. Despite this being within the legal rights of the First Nations people, that is not the only argument as to why these settlers are dumb and clearly committing terrorist acts. When considering the conservation argument presented by the terrorists, Justice Grubin presents the statistics that during the normal fishing season, a non-Indigenous fisherman can bring in anywhere between $250,000 to $500,000. Canadian dollars? That's a good question. Whereas Indigenous fishermen can only make $30,000 to $50,000. This is clearly a huge wealth disparity, and is obvious that a settler fisherman catches almost 10 times the amount of any Indigenous fisherman in or out of season. We ask that all of our listeners please send money over that way. There will be a document listed with links to help.
Look at that, shooting flares at us. We're trying to check our gear. We have 12 or 13 boats trying to ram our fucking 20-foot boat. We're in a hot pursuit. All these guys trying to fucking ram us, shooting flares at us. Look at the smoke from the flare, look at that. Holy fuck. There's four boats that came close to ramming us. All of them trying to come after us. Look at that, shooting flares at us. Shooting flares at our boat.
Settler fishermen tend to have a lot more wealth, and it's because they work for these more multinational companies that focus on putting out as much as they possibly can. And so the Mi'kmaq Nation purchased 50% stake in one of these companies, essentially making them the boss of these white fishermen that are burning down their fisheries. Which, you can look at this one or two ways, in my opinion. You can either look at an anti-capitalist point of view, which is to say that every form of capitalist trade is bad at all times, no matter what, simply because it pushes forth capitalist society, and you're not wrong necessarily, but it just lacks any nuance, right? Like, I don't think it's correct for third world nations to pursue capitalist gains, but I understand why they wouldn't want to remain in poverty. As communists, we shouldn't be poverty fetishists, rather we should want to see everybody's material conditions raised, so that way nobody experiences that level of despair that poverty brings. There should be nobody in abject poverty. It's just a real simple goal, in my opinion. I mean, simple is probably not the best word for it, but it does seem like a clear-cut goal. Anyway, so that's one good thing, and I would suggest the people listed in the document linked below that you ask them if they still need money or what's the best way to help them. Because I don't know. I can only know so much, right? So it is a great day to be Indigenous, and an even greater day to be a leftist. I would like to preface this section by saying I will be playing Spanish audio, and so we're going to try to translate that. Like, we're still trying to translate the first one, so if anybody knows anybody who speaks Spanish, please contact us and we're going to try to get you some money in order to translate things. And I really hope you're an honest person because you're going to be self-reporting your hours that it takes you to translate these episodes, because I understand that it could take you upwards of 2 to 3 hours to translate 1 hour of audio. So I'm just saying. Anyway, in order to pay the translator, we're going to have to open up a Patreon again. For now, there will just be like written transcripts that I shittily translate. Sorry. But we will be opening the Patreon starting January 1st, and we're going to run it for a year. Everything that we gain in that year, I'm hoping will pay for everything we need for a while. So we're just going to run it for one full year. If you want to donate to that, go ahead. We are going to try to offer bonus content, and since I'm associated with the Red Nation, BOTI is going to be very associated with them just as an indigenous organization. BOTI is a very big tent podcast. I don't want any indigenous person coming here and assuming that they're not welcome. You know, because this podcast is primarily for indigenous people to hear information from somebody like them, and then for settlers to get education for indigenous people they know nothing about. I would like to get everybody from, well, somebody from every nation that has ever existed that still exists today. And then people from federal tribes that can explain the nuances of what a tribe is compared to what a nation is, I think would be a very helpful episode. A lot of this is going to be me brainstorming ideas live, so sorry about that. But this is like, I have to fill out an hour and a half. So anyway. We also would like to thank the newest member of Bands of Turtle Island team, who now edits the show, Tuhotsky for Trotsky, an absolute mensch, to quote a friend of the show, Talia from The Minion. We, however, will only be hearing from them from the post-recording side of things. This is because we want to prioritize colonized and diaspora voices. And so, however, we will probably have Connor on eventually, because we aren't opposed to the non-colonized being on the show so much as not being the center of attention. So eventually I'd like to get Connor on the show for y'all to meet him. With all that out of the way, it is a good day to be leftist because of the great victory in Bolivia that was won, not by voting, but through struggle of the masses and the indigenous people of Bolivia fighting right-wing terrorism and a fascist government for a year. By staging mass strikes and preventing the would-be regime from gaining power, not by the ballot, but by the bullet. If you were unaware of what has happened, I ask you all go take a look at our first episode on Bolivia, where better resources are listed. Otherwise, we're just going to link all the information from there as our first episode. So I suggest you read and listen to those rather than my rambling synopsis, but I understand if you are constrained for time, which is obviously why we make these episodes. If you don't want to listen to that episode, then we will give a quick breakdown of things that happen. Skip ahead a few minutes again if you don't want to hear the synopsis, but essentially there was a coup in Bolivia. November 10th of 2019, the military forced President Evo Morales to step down and flee the country. After fleeing, the coup government would install Jeanine Enez, who is an alleged member of Jared Leto's cult. This came after the accusation that Evo rigged the October election, determined by the Organization of American States, or OAS, due to an overwhelming landslide victory over the candidates Evo won with about 40%, with the next leading candidate having 36%. This is in a state with about 5 parties that present a major turnout within any normal election. So, you know, that is quite a landslide. Evo winning with about 600,000 more votes than the next leading party. The claim that the vote was rigged comes from the state of emergency declared during the count, which suspended the live count. The reason the state of emergency was declared on October 23rd was due to right-wing protesters and terrorists protesting in Santa Cruz due to Evo running for a fourth term and an obvious lead on his opponents. To them, the election was already rigged, and so they were calling for a general strike, but only had influence in Santa Cruz. The grassroots fascistic leader is named Luis Fernando Camacho, who helps run Union Juvenil Cruzanista, Christo fascist group that met with AOC, AOC as in Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and has had many photos taken doing the Nazi salute. So pro-government counter-protesters began to clash with them in the streets. Thus, the state of emergency was declared to safely count the votes. The reason Evo was able to run again was due to a 2016 decision to remove term limits, which the opposition claims was Evo manipulating the checks and balances in Bolivia. This opposition ultimately comes from a settler colonial mentality, which is easily seen when Camacho walks into the capital and declares he had returned God to the burned palace. This all the while, Pastore to his side said, Pachamama will never return to the palace. Bolivia belongs to Christ. However, less obviously, but still really obvious, is the U.S. desire to develop Bolivia's lithium mines. At the time, Bolivia had the largest known source of lithium. And to no surprise, after the coup happened, Tesla's stocks were raised. However, to my surprise, when confronted about the coup, Elon Musk said, we will coup whoever we want on Twitter. Elon defenders have claimed this was a joke, but given Musk's history of saying things he shouldn't legally say on Twitter, it's most likely that this was not, and rather it was a plain and blatant outface declaration that they will coup who they want. It shouldn't be surprising that Camacho and Mesa were mentioned in the Panama Papers, and it also shouldn't surprise anybody that the extreme amount of violence that occurred during the coup. Jeanine practically did the presidential ceremony herself, with no quorum present in the Commons due to many MAS members fleeing for safety as violence began to erupt more. One example was the kidnapping and torture of Patricia Arce. Here we'll insert that audio from last year too, where she's getting dragged through the streets and a bucket of paint poured over her head. Yeah, it's something meant to strike fear into people, especially indigenous people who, under Evo, felt they had power. And once the coup took place, you know, you saw how settler colonialism actually helps, quote unquote, indigenous people. So over the last year, the coup government has never been able to gain control. So Evo fled the country to try to prevent bloodshed, and then had an arrest issued for him, like a warrant issued for him for inciting terrorism. However, with the help of Mexico and Argentina, he was given asylum and protected. Now, I hope those who skipped magically got to this point so we can talk about stuff not covered in our last episode. Following the coup and Evo's fleeing of the country, Bolivia went through a great deal of direct action and violence and resistance to the fascist regime. I want to take the time to discuss this as it is extremely patronizing and ultimately ahistorical to say Bolivians voted out fascism, quote-unquote. In reality, they fought, bled, and shed many tears and blood in order to prevent the takeover of one of the greatest decolonial projects and defend their real freedoms from the would-be freedoms, quote-unquote, of the West. The coup government tried to delay the elections repeatedly for one reason or another, which, of course, coronavirus was one of them. Now that an election has transpired, and having to be transparent to legitimize the opposition's claims, Mas has won another landslide victory, yet again. Along with that win, a collapse in Tesla stocks followed, although it must be mentioned a new lithium source was found in Nevada. But it is even more important to bring up that the U.S. is a colonized country. Elon is simply following in the footsteps of apartheid emerald mine-owning parents and making a lithium mine to destroy indigenous land, whether North or South America. He does not care. The arrest warrant of Evo Morales for terrorism has, of course, been dismissed, and in its place comes a recommendation for prosecution to the coup leaders like Inez, Fernando, Mesa. Unfortunately, with the restoration of true democracy in Bolivia comes the reactionary resistance trying to maintain what little control they were able to gain. No longer in an administrative role, the opposition has taken to the streets again, and one of the strikers we previewed the audio for in our previous episode has died after an attack perpetrated by a group of fascists. A supposed group of fascists.
Bueno, ¿qué le dice al señor Camacho que está viene amenazando consecuentemente a lo que es el trabajo que hace el gobierno y desmerece el trabajo de las organizaciones?
A ese señor no hay que hablarle nada, simplemente le voy a mandar un mensaje. Que se ponga a pensar porque está haciendo levantar al pueblo. Y cuando se levante el león dormido a la cabeza de sus mineros, las cosas son serias. Que vaya a su departamento, que pacifique las cosas, que ya no siga incurriendo en delitos penales como la toma de instituciones y peor aún, incitando a la discriminación, el racismo, la agresión, el golpe de Estado que están manifestando, que obviamente sabemos que es financiado. Lo vamos a buscar hasta el último rincón del país si es que sigue confrontando a nuestra parte de Bolivia, a nuestro proceso que nos ha costado vidas, consolidar un Estado plurinacional de Bolivia.
¿Cuál es el compromiso de los mineros, hermano Orlando?
Vida. El compromiso de nuestra propia vida en defensa de nuestra patria. Históricamente lo hemos realizado en defensa del país, hemos recuperado la democracia a punta de dinamita y lo vamos a seguir haciendo para la defensa de nuestra democracia y peor aún, defender obviamente las intenciones de golpe de Estado que ya lo han lanzado. Por lo tanto, vamos a estar en pie de lucha a partir de este momento hasta la definición final de la pacificación de la población boliviana.
Bueno, su mensaje a todo el pueblo boliviano.
Que simplemente hay que darse cuenta de cómo han enarbolado el día de hoy y nuevamente han sacado a la luz la lucha de clases. La lucha de clases prácticamente se está viendo acá, entre blancos y negros, así de claro tengo que decirlo, porque lamentablemente ellos no aceptan. Y lo que no nos va a perdonar el imperio es que el día de hoy un hermano indígena, dirigente, ha dominado y ha manejado y ha conducido mejor a través del gobierno. Por lo tanto, eso es lo que no les duele a ellos y no les deja dormir. Creo que los trabajadores estamos más unidos que nunca. La vanguardia del movimiento obrero del país sólida en esta movilización.
Muy amable, gracias. Así de esta manera estamos escuchando las palabras de nuestro ejecutivo, en todo caso, aquí el representante máximo de los mineros de toda Bolivia, nuestro hermano Orlando, junto a su comitiva en esta marcha importante en apoyo a lo que es el proceso de cambio y en apoyo a lo que es nuestro hermano.
Orlando Gutierrez was the executive secretary of the Union Federation of Mining Workers. He died Wednesday, October 28th of 2020, after sustaining multiple injuries from the fascist group. And Luis Arce said on Twitter, "I express my deep regret for the physical departure of our brother Carlos Orlando Gutierrez. Luna, rest in peace. Great mining leader who always defended the interests of the Bolivian people. My solidarity with the family in this difficult time. We accompany them in their pain." You know, looking over what he said there and how he said the physical departure, you know, that draws in the same ideas that I mentioned in the History of AIM episodes about a historical preservation or a historical perseverance of these indigenous struggles. And I think, as far as regular people in a Western sense go, Orlando really captures a chief, you know. While talking with Nick, he mentioned how a lot of the elders out our way, you know, out by our reservations, consider him a leader. Not really him a leader, but consider Red Nation itself its own secret society, and thus the leaders of Red Nation are leaders of a secret society, much like the Braveheart Society and stuff like that. And so, in this way, I think we would consider Orlando's mining union to be its own secret society if we were ever to have seen a fruition of Lakota values in a society. That's just my own personal opinion. It doesn't mean much here. It's just something I thought about when reading Luis Arce's words. And so this was followed by Evo saying, "It is with deep pain that I've learned about the death of Comrade Orlando Gutierrez, a young, brave, and committed mining leader of the historic FSTMB, and a militant of the process of change. My condolences and solidarity with his family." And of course, the process of change is the socialist, scientific socialist project that Bolivia sort of tries to perpetrate within today's society. And so many more examples of this kind of violence can be seen across Bolivia, and it serves as a grave and important reminder to the U.S. leftists that they should be seeking to establish a plural national state like Bolivia after any revolution. This isn't because, you know, of course, I'm pushing a decolonial narrative on here, but because ultimately, if you're looking to have a fair and just society for people that have been hurt by history, not only are reparations for Black people a necessity for any socialist society, but reparations for Native Americans, and rather than reparations, I would say restorations of treaty commitments. These are things white people agreed to, that we were forced to agree to. So it's not like we wanted this deal. And so any white socialist needs to consider those treaties simply as it stands as a baseline for what capitalist society was willing to offer. So however, I think the biggest question on most listeners' mind is, who is the new president of Bolivia? Luis Arce. Despite being an elected socialist leader, not forced to be condoned by the OAS, Luis has a long record of success and good faith engagement with the people of Bolivia as well as administration. He served as an economy minister under Evo, who saw one of the most significant reductions of poverty in Bolivia's history. So, as long as we're willing to call China socialist for its reduction in poverty, MLs should most definitely call Bolivia socialist for their reduction in poverty. And so I think this is overall good, but the technocratic streak he has lends him credibility to the neoliberal world order, and that worries me. But hopefully, you know, we'll see a good outcome. It's not my country. It's not my place to, you know, make speculations over whether he's a good or bad leader, right? It should be amplified that Luis has already moved to establish ties with Cuba and Venezuela again, and which would mean a more strong economic coalition for the three of them going forward. As well as given Mexico and Argentina's aid, we can at least expect an anti-imperialist coalition to form if there really is a socialist wave in South and Central America. But Luis said, "We are going to reestablish all relations. This government has acted very ideologically, depriving the Bolivian people of access to Cuban medicine, Russian medicine, and advances in China." He said, "For a purely ideological issue, it has exposed the population in a way unnecessary and harmful." During Inez's short tenure, all Cuban doctors were expelled. So when the pandemic came, it was obviously detrimental to the country. And now Evo Morales returned to Bolivia on November 9th and was given a beautiful welcome home.
Triumphant. That's how Evo Morales returned to Bolivia on Monday, after a year in exile in Argentina. He traveled to the city of La Quiaca, right at the border between the two South American nations.
"I always knew I was going to return, but not as fast. Something historical. Thanks to the unity of the Bolivian people, my brothers and sisters, history repeats itself. A fight for life, dignity, peace and dignity."
Morales was forced to leave Bolivia last year after violence followed a presidential election that, according to the Organization of American States, were filled with irregularities. The armed forces asked him to resign. Morales fled first to Mexico and then came to Argentina. Once here, he became the campaign manager of Bolivia's Movement Towards Socialism party that won the elections last month. Bolivia's new president, Luis Arce, was inaugurated on Sunday. Morales crossed the border with Argentina's president, Alberto Fernández. He said Morales' return is an example to Latin America.
That's what Evo was, the real president that represented the heart of Bolivia. When these things in Bolivia were not allowed, as president, he did an impressive job. If there is one place in Latin America where the social and economic structures have changed, that place is Bolivia. They did take care of the deficit, development, equality, and justice.
With the current U.S. election now concluded and Joe Biden being confirmed to have won via Georgia, Trump has of course claimed fraud and is trying to form lawsuits in every state he lost that was key. Evo said it doesn't matter who wins, the North American people vote but do not rule. Transnational corporations rule. Of course, this was followed by a quip about Trump pleading to the OAS to rule it a fraud. And though I only saw it passively through internet commentary, supposedly the OAS was in Atlanta. Evo will not be returning to the government, however, but the projects and legacy his administration made will be continued. They will be taking economic injections, so it should be expected to see China and the West fight for that cash advancement. Before leaving Argentina, Evo ate with several union leaders and traveled by land back home. And today is a good day to be indigenous. And Evo's return shows how mass action is the only way to fight fascism. When you rely solely on a vote, you come to a 1.5% lead with the projection of winning by the media. This is what has occurred during the Trump v. Biden election. When December comes and the Electoral College finally votes, or if the Supreme Court helps re-elect Trump, just as the hanging chads helped Bush, we will know if voting works. However, I'd argue when President-elect Biden assumes office, if there is no violent right-wing uprising, we will see a continuation of child cages, we will see a continuation of pipelines, we will see a continuation of bombing Iraqi children, we will see a continuation of all of the gruesome imperialism that the U.S. has engaged in. We will see reforms in healthcare to appease the masses, but we'll see more fracking greenlighted under the guise of better regulation, which is usually just a bribe. Overall, Biden outshines the turd that is Trump, but Biden isn't more than a polished turd himself. With a long history of racism and a clearly too friendly relationship with oil and banks, Biden will continue Trump's economic project and probably increase the economic saber-rattling against China. All of this is just my prediction, so I guess we will see over the next 4 years which country of brown people we bomb. All while claiming to have voted out fascism in some sort of American exceptionalist psychosis.
Poor kids are just as bright and just as talented as white kids. They're gonna put you all back in chains.
In Delaware, the largest growth in population is Indian Americans moving from India. You cannot go to a 7-Eleven or a Dunkin' Donuts unless you have a slight Indian accent. So fully, I'm not joking.
I mean, you got the first sort of mainstream African American who was articulate and bright and clean and nice-looking guy. I mean, that's a storybook.
You got more questions, but I tell you, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, and you ain't black.
I'd like to thank everybody for listening and taking the time to download this episode. And if I could please ask y'all to leave a review to help find the pod. All the donation links will be in the show notes. We will eventually be restarting the Patreon next year, starting January 1st, when we feel it is an appropriate time. And this will be to pay for an editor who's already editing. So it's a back pay as well as forward pay. but they're going to help produce more episodes for the Patreons, as well as more regular episodes for regular listeners. We're also going to be paying for official music instead of always stealing other people's music and linking it in the description, which everybody should go and show their support for the music we used. If you have a topic you want to come and cover or want us to cover, please message us on Twitter at Bands Island or our email, which is bandsofturtleisland@gmail.com. Please leave a review. It helps new listeners find the show. And if you all want to help me for writing the notes, putting out the show, yada, yada. Basically, if you want to pay me for the labor I put into this, I'm not asking you to pay me, but if you want to, like if you want to support the show in some way that you don't feel like giving to the donations we link is good enough, send money my way to my Cash App, which is $Bands of Turtle Island. That goes directly to me. I'm not using it for the podcast. Everything that goes to that account, I'll let you know what I'm using it for. Bills, food, and then the most recent thing I asked for help for was my glasses, which came November 30th. And, you know, I want to thank everybody personally via voice for doing that. And if you want to continue to help support me personally for this labor I do, then the Cash App is the only way to do it. Everything that goes to the Patreon will be split between the host per episode and then primarily goes to the musicians and editors. So, yeah, keep an eye out for new series and new collaborations. But other than that, I want to thank you all for listening. I hope you look forward to the next episode. I know this was a shorter one. I did it by myself. But overall, just toksha, and have a good night.
En las calles y en las plazas encontrarán nuestros pechos, hemos venido de lejos a exigir nuestros derechos, hemos venido de lejos a exigir nuestros derechos. En los hombros y en las manos traemos dolor y esperanza, y aquí todos nos quedamos desparramando la brasa, y aquí todos nos quedamos desparramando la brasa. Y en mi pecho nace un grito, todos juntos compañeros, los mineros volveremos, todos juntos compañeros, los mineros volveremos. Ay, la 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 la, ay, la 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 la, ay, la 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 la, ay, la 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 la. Ahora se oye solo un grito, los mineros volveremos. Encontrarán nuestros pechos, hemos venido de lejos a exigir nuestros derechos, hemos venido de lejos a exigir nuestros derechos. En los hombros y en las manos traemos dolor y esperanza, y aquí todos nos quedamos desparramando la brasa, y aquí todos nos quedamos desparramando la brasa. Nace un grito, todos juntos compañeros, los mineros volveremos, todos juntos compañeros, los mineros volveremos.
Ay, la, 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 no volverán a sangrar las calles del campamento, ni se escucharán lamentos en las noches de San Juan. Si nos quitan el pan a fuerza de dictadura, nuestra lucha será dura.